It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And we are off and running on this, the 28th day of November, 2017. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And yes, this program is live and we are streaming. Oh, wait a minute. We are streaming both at WhiteRoseSociety.org, I think, I hope. And I'm certain we're streaming at HeadOn.live. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. And we deal with first things first around here, and that means letting you know who made this evening possible. Big thanks going out last night for the challenge from Silent R. Lamar that led us to be able to get rid of last week's fundraising deficit and take care of last night. There are 3 days left in November: tonight, tomorrow night, and Thursday. That means there's $600. There would be. $600 to be raised, okay? But there isn't $600 to be raised. If whatever the number turns out to be, if we can raise that by like tonight and tomorrow night, we'll have a fundraising free Thursday on the Horn, and I would love that. So here are the thank yous. Thanks going out to Sharon in Ohio. Thank you, Sharon. This program brought to you in part by Sharon. Thanks very kindly to Randy in PA. This program brought to you in part by Randy in PA. Thanks very kindly to Charlene in Rhode Island. This program brought to you in part by Charlene in Rhode Island. And thanks very kindly to Philip in Texas. This program brought to you in part by Philip in Texas. Thanks to Smitty in Florida. This program brought to you in part by Smitty in Florida. Also, thanks going out to our buddy Harold, president and CEO of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society, Sodstress. This program brought to you in part by Harold and the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Yes, indeed. So all that being said, That took a big bite out of the fundraising for this evening, so that we've only got, doing the math, that would be, we got $50 to finish tonight. That means we have $450 to finish the month. If we knock out $450 tonight, both Wednesday and Thursday are fundraising free nights on the Horn, and that's almost like a vacation, not having to talk about this stuff. Wouldn't that be wonderful? So, shall we start counting? Let's start counting backwards from 450 this evening and see if we can knock out November. $50 to knock out tonight, $400 to knock out November, and golly, two nights of fundraising free. It's almost too much to... No, it's not. We're going to use the power of positive thinking. So thanks to our subscribers, and thanks to everybody who contributes to keep this bit of independent media, independent broadcasting, on the air. Because that's how it happens. Okay? So if you want to help out, run over to headonradionetwork.com. Click on contribute. And just use the little box there. If you want to click the box and become a subscriber, remember, we send out bumper stickers. Horn bumper stickers, and they wanted all bumper stickers, courtesy of our buddy Scott in Sweden. We send those out, try to get a couple done a day. And you'll get one if you become a subscriber. Just click the little box. It says, make this a recurring monthly donation, and away you go. And it's just set it and forget it, and it comes in. And someday we'll have 400 folks on an average of. We got some that kick in more than 10, some less than 10. And if we've ever got an average of $410 a month subscribers, there's no more fundraising at all. Because it's all just taken care of. If you can't stand PayPal, if you don't want to become a subscriber, don't let that put you off. You can just just do it as a one-time, one-off. There's also the Patreon campaign, patreon.com, patreon.com/Bob Kincaid, and that's another way. And those all come out on the first of the month. Right now, we have right at one day's worth of programming worth of Patreon subscribers. So, cross fingers, okay? But be that as it may, I get so ever so tired of talking about the fundraising. It's so much more fun when we can talk about the issues of the day. Hey, thanks. Thanks to our buddy Steve in New York for getting us started this evening. So our 450 is now 425 to get us down to the end of the month. Thank you, Steve. Thank you very, very much. Let's see. I'm just checking some. Oh, happy birthday to our old buddy Psychoticus up in Nanaimo. If you're still listening, happy birthday, Psychoticus. And yes, all the streams are just running like a top. Oh, Christ. Wait, wood, knock. I wish I had a sledgehammer. But everything's running. It's a miracle. So with everything running, and everybody who listening live, let me say this right now. Because for some people, for some reason, head on.live is a surprise. When TuneIn goes down, when Stitcher goes down, when Roku goes down, that means that White Rose has gone down. That means in order to get the live program, there's still a live program to be gotten. So run over to headon.live when that happens, and boom, you'll be right in. And everything will be groovy. But TuneIn and Stitcher and Roku and all of those things are all tied to the White Rose stream. So the health of the White Rose stream determines whether or not there's a stream on all of those other platforms. Okay? So that's how that all works. Just kind of head on, headon.live. There's a player there on the main screen, and it's real easy. So, hopefully, and then, of course, you know, for people who listen subsequently, there's the White Rose RSS feed. I upload that every night. And there's also podbean.com. And I know is I put it up there. I have no idea how to get to it. I presume if you search Bob Kincaid or Head On with Bob Kincaid, it'll pop up. That takes care of most of the. Hey, look, we're down to 415. Thanks, Clarence. Thanks a ton. Thank you very, very much. Okay. Like I said, it's Titanic Tuesday. Oh, wait. See, I forgot something. And that's only because, well, I need a little memory boost. Yes, I do. And, well, luckily for us, there's a memory boost to be had. I'm talking, of course, about pendulous persimmon. That's right, pendulous persimmon from Horn Labs. Pendulous persimmon from the hardworking, ever so creative, and alliterative scientists at Horn Labs. Pendulous persimmon will pick you up or lay you low, depending on whatever it is that you might need at a given time. You know, I've never cared much for persimmon, especially the green variety. But thanks to pendulous persimmon from Horn Labs, well, I can take a little handful of those son-of-a-guns, and I've got all the persimmon goodness I need to get me through my day. Absolutely. Pendulous persimmon from Horn Labs. Post no bills, use no hooks. This side up, FOB, COD, NBA, pendulous persimmon from Horn Labs. And remember, if you order a 3-month supply for only $107.17, we'll send you that 3-month supply, and we'll also send you a little bundle of test strips you can use so that you can verify with your very own eyes that pendulous persimmon has absolutely no nutritional value whatsoever, just like all the other nutritional supplements offered all across the radio spectrum. Because you can't be a real, live, honest-to-goodness professional radio program without a bullshit nutritional supplement to try to palm off on one's credulous audience. That's right. Pendulous persimmon from Horn Labs. Yes, of course it will. You don't even have to ask anymore. It is absolutely a wonder for it's like the Bible. It makes things straight, but not in that way. Yes, pendulous persimmon. From Horn Labs. Like I said, yep. It's hardly even necessary to ask, Brother Deacon Asa. Does pendulous persimmon help your throbbing pendulum rock a chub, Comrade Kincaid? It absolutely does or doesn't, depending whether or not you want it to, given the situation and the circumstances. Pendulous persimmon, another absolutely meaningless, worthless, useless nutritional supplement from Horn Labs. I got my pendulous persimmon, and now I'm just feeling absolutely, I'm feeling absolutely perky. I'm perky with pendulous persimmon from Horn Labs. Yeesh. One of these days we're going to run out of fruits and vegetables. Oh, well. And the funny thing is, most of these things, minus the adjectives, you can probably buy them from some purveyor of useless nutritional supplements out there. And they're probably making a fortune on it. Oh, well. So it is. It's Titanic Tuesday. You may recall that Titanic Tuesday, the idea for Titanic Tuesday, happened many, many years ago when Steve, one of America's most underappreciated monotones, took a break from reading the newspaper to his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers, listeners, and took a call from one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing listeners and who asked, "Steve, how come you reckon it is there is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? We ain't nowhere near the beach." To which Steve answered, "Well, caller." At which point, people began falling asleep at the wheel, slumping over vacuum cleaners, passing out at the breakfast table, because two or three syllables from Steve was enough to stupefy entire populations. "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." He said it. This really happened. Yes, the Titanic plates. And this is the same guy who said that the New River flows south. And, well, never mind. the Titanic plates. And so ever since, we have celebrated moments of great right-wing intellect on Tuesdays of the week, and we named it Titanic Tuesday for those self-same Titanic plates and the forward into the iceberg attitude of right-wing intellectuals. Yes. Still no word on the Titanic banana bender. Mm-hmm. No. Still, it's probably still down there, down there at the bottom of the ocean with Jack. I read a story the other day that some enterprising soul with some scientific background had done, because, the finite life, why not just fritter some of it away? From the first time I saw that movie, Titanic, I had a feeling that Rose was actually bumping Jack off. Probably shouldn't say Jack off on the radio. It's the internet. Who gives a damn? But that looked like a pretty damn big door she was on there in the freezing Atlantic, as he chattered and turned blue, and she said she'd always love him as his head bobbed under the water, and he just sort of slipped away. Yeah. Some enterprising soul did some I don't know, some kind of research or whatever, and decided that, yes, there was room on the door for Jack, confirming, at least to my mind, that Rose was the homicidal maniac I had thought her to be the entire time. Romance dies hard. Well, there's a little bit of perspective. I talk about hating fundraising, but Larry just said, I'll help Thursday. Your show and hearing you ask for donations, believe me, is a pleasure compared to, and God love her, because I do, but Stephanie Miller, and I was up early enough to listen to her here on the West Coast this morning, but when you count in the time that she's actually advertising shit while not on commercial and her cutesies that overdo it by way too long to start the show, there's actually only 20 minutes of substance in an hour of her show. That's way less than even Limbaugh or Snorri Bori. Her show's cool, but just as you get into the talk, it's only 4 to 5 minutes tops till her next sales pitch or commercial. So her three-hour show would be cool, condensed to an hour. Otherwise, it's too painful to listen to anymore. If she had your mostly uninterrupted format, it would be okay to do the shit she does with blathering on. Also, I love your show because it's real and you're not all giddy and delusional like this shit's all coming to a head any day with Trump. We're in this for the long haul, and people need to quit expecting some big miracle to drop. To close, let's get real. Trump could fire Mueller and pardon everyone in the blink of an eye. Sadly, all too true. And it being Titanic Tuesday, we've got plenty of Titanic evidence to suggest that none of this is going to end anytime, and we're just awake in the nightmare. And you can either try to drink your way through it, smoke your way through it, snort your way through it, or just sort of put on the little little Alex eyelid opening things and just go wide-eyed into the horror. The horror. The horror. Yeah. And that's kind of where I am. It's horror yyesterday, horror today, horror tomorrow, and horror for the foreseeable future. So that, it's kind of a where do we go from here sort of thing. How do we cope? And the only way I've come up with for coping is to try to laugh a little try to take my outrage out for a walk once in a while. And we just talk amongst ourselves and create this little community that for 3 hours every evening or whenever it is you're participating and sharing in it, it gives us a chance to sort of process and letting everything go and breathe. Oh, sorry, my neighbor's burning coal again. Yummy, bituminous. No, that wasn't a bit. That's not a joke. It was a reasonably warm day today. I mean, it's 72 lovely degrees here in the studio because we've got kind of a southern exposure. Whoa. I think he not only lit the coal, I think he farted up the chimney too. Jesus. That, or I don't know, maybe he's smelting iron or something. God damn. Honey, do you smell that?
That's Santa Claus.
That is not Santa Claus.
That's Santa Claus. He's giving you coal for Christmas because you've been bad.
That bastard. Agnes said Santa Claus has given me coal for Christmas. He and I are going to have a talk. I mean, I'd be okay with the switches. I mean, shoot, I might even enjoy that. But the coal, no. Them's fighting minerals. But speaking of coal, we're having, did you know this? Because it's Titanic Tuesday. We're having us the only clean power plan hearings in the whole new United States today and tomorrow down in Charleston. Yep. Scott Pruitt, industry hack, flack, and person who doesn't give a flying rat's ass whether anybody can breathe or drink clean water, at least doesn't care about, you know, the people who don't have enough money to give him big checks and who doesn't live anywhere near here, sent the EPA down here to listen. And among other things, the political hacks and flacks came out to do the necessary level of obeisance to the coal industry, bowing and scraping and kowtowing and kissing the earth and rubbing some coal dust up their sinuses and that sort of thing. And Bob Murray showed up. You know, Bob Murray, the sort of balded, rounded, trollish little turd with the blood of Crandall Canyon all over him. Mm-hmm. He came sauntering into the room for the hearing. And he had forced a bunch of his workers, and they are his workers. I mean, if he tells them to jump, they paint themselves green and hop up and down and say ribbit a lot. He gave his workers paid day off and told them if they wanted to come to work tomorrow, too, that they had damned well better be in Charleston and a-wearing of their work clothes. No shit. There was a room full of asshole coal miners wearing their asshole coal mining clothes and their asshole coal mining hats. And when they walked into the room, or when Bob Murray walked into the room, they all had to stand up and tug the forelock for him and give him a knuckle, you know. Bless you, sir. Oh, bless you, Bob Murray. Thank you, Bob Murray. God bless you, Bob Murray. I hope you don't burn me up in one of your mine explosions. It was embarrassing. if they weren't coal miners, I'd have felt bad for them. But as it were, they signed on to be Bob Murray's little slaves. So, you know, bow and scrape away, boys. Bow and scrape away. Sickening. So this is all surrounding, and this might be a little detail-y, but I think we can get through it because this is, after all, among the most intelligent radio communities presently in existence. West Virginia Attorney General Patrick Morrissey was also there. And Patrick Morrissey is all terrible proud of himself. Because he's the one who filed the suit that got the Clean Power Plan injunctified before Trump could even declare that it was dead. Now remember, the Clean Power Plan has multiple facets to it, and there are multiple reasons for its existence. One of which is the fact that the Supreme Court of the United States told the EPA that it had to do something about CO2 pollution. Now, this goes back a few years. It was 2007, as a matter of fact. It was during the reign of error. It was Massachusetts versus EPA. You can look it up. You can look it up, just like you can look up the efficacy of pendulous persimmon. Pendulous persimmon will absolutely help you as you cope with things like neighbors who burn crappy bituminous coal. Sorry, I just had to stop for a program for a product pitch there. No, 2007. Massachusetts versus EPA, and the Supreme Court ruled that the EPA was mandated, required to, wasn't a thing if they wanted to or not, they had to regulate CO2, because CO2 is toxic. Okay. So it's not like the Obama EPA. Remember the Obama EPA war on coal? Well, the EPA all along was doing what it had to do because the Supreme Court told it it had to do it. Because to have not done it would have gotten the EPA hauled back in front of the Supreme Court and, you know, held in contempt. Well, mind you, of course, Republicans hold the entire idea of breathable air and drinkable water. In fact, a clean, livable planet. They hold all of that in contempt. So the EPA then went about doing, in the, you know, science-y stuff to determine what the best way to go about regulating carbon dioxide would be. And that's how the Clean Power Plan came into existence. It's a combination of the Supreme Court of the United States, an order thereof, and the Clean Air Act, which is a real, live, honest-to-goodness, constitutionally passed muster law on the books of the United States that says there are things that people have to do in the United States to make sure that everybody else can breathe air. So one of the things that we know is that coal-fired power plants produce particulate matter out the smokestacks. Now we're not talking here about whether the particulates are, No, there's CO2 produced out those smokestacks, and there's particulate matter. The particulate matter is hell on wheels to people who have things like asthma, emphysema, bronchitis, generally speaking, chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder. I got a feeling tonight's going to be one of those cough all night nights after the amount of coal smoke I'm breathing right now. It's kind of creepy when you realize that, I'm being poisoned by my neighbor. I really am. I wish this was Smelladio, or we had the video up and we could do smell-o-vision so you could smell what I'm smelling right now. And when you smell it, you know that there's some, I mean, you can't see it. You can't reach out and touch it. But you know what? After a couple of nights of this, especially once we get into the teeth of the winter and he's burning it morning, noon, and night, Agnes will come in here with like a damp paper towel and just wipe surfaces, and it'll come back black. The damp paper towel will come up black. Coal black. I remember when I called the West Virginia DEP just asking the questions. Your neighbor's burning coal, is he? Yes. Well, that's what he's supposed to do. This is a coal state, this is West Virginia. Of course he can burn coal. Even if it's poisoning me? Especially if it's poisoning you, you tree hugger. Click. The Clean Power Plan, was declared DOA by Geezer Disgustus, because Geezer Disgustus doesn't give a fuck if people in the United States can breathe. He might care if he could figure out a way to make the people of the United States pay him to be able to breathe. Maybe he could sell them Trump-branded bottles of air. But until such time as that happens, the Clean Power Plan's got to go. Because, it had something to do with that one who used to live in our White House, the Kenyan Muslim usurper. It's all a part of Damnatio Memoriae. But getting back to Patrick Morrissey, this is some ugly, ugly, ugly politics. Patrick Morrissey was there. Joe Manchin sent a memo or a letter carried by a staffer. It wrapped up real pretty and had little hearts drawn of it and said, "I love Co." But Patrick Morrissey and Evan Jenkins are going to duke it out in the primary next spring to see which one of them will get to face Joe Manchin, because Joe Manchin is not going to be defeated. by a hustle being run to primary him. And it's a hustle. So Joe will survive the primary, and then he'll face off against Evan Jenkins or Patrick Morrissey, and my money's on Patrick Morrissey. Okay? Patrick Morrissey, in case you don't know, and there's no reason you should unless you live in West Virginia, Patrick Morrissey is a scumbag who came from out of state to infect the legal system via the Attorney General's office, and he has done that. He and his wife were lobbyists for pharma. His wife was a lobbyist, is a lobbyist for a massive opioid producer, and helped to spread the opioid crisis here in West Virginia. That's who we're talking about. But he is also, of course, a world-class lickspittle and brown noser to the coal industry, and again, doesn't give a good goddamn who he poisons. Because the check keeps clearing, and none of the poisoned people are able to pay him not to poison them. Capitalism. So he's hell-bent on not just stopping the Clean Power Plan, and he was the guy who started the suit that was joined in by 26 other attorneys general to make sure that breathable air would not be would not be something that American people could have. And of course, there's the CO2 issue as well. Again, I went over that. The Supreme Court said the EPA has to regulate CO2 under the Clean Air Act. They have no choice. Well, he's on a bit of a crusade, Morrissey is. He's not happy just killing the Clean Power Plan. He wants to have a legacy, Patrick Morrissey does. This titanic, goddamned vicious, criminally dangerous idiot. So not only does he want to make sure the Clean Power Plan gets killed, he wants to make sure that no Congress ever in the future, man, he's playing the long game. He wants to make sure that no Congress can ever again even consider regulating greenhouse gases. That's how dangerous this freak is. He's not just a danger to people alive now, he's dangerous to people who haven't even yet been born. Not just people who haven't been born, people who haven't been conceived. Not just people who haven't been conceived, but generations of people who don't even, for whom the generation that will conceive them doesn't even yet exist. That is the existential danger to American humanity that Patrick Morrissey is. But no, he's going to keep at it. He's hell-bent, he says, on the EPA can't just pull the Clean Power Plan and say, nope, not going to do it anything ever more. Nope, ain't going to do it. They have to issue a replacement rule. So he wants to make sure that any rule that the EPA issues is absolutely useless in terms of protecting either the environment or human health. In the main, he has this notion that there would be a rule that says that power plants only have to make modifications that they could make to an individual power plant, but it's not going to have any sort of regional or national scope to it. It's just going to be on a plant-by-plant basis. you know, if they've got the spare nuts and bolts laying around. In an interview with Think Progress, Morrissey said, "We want to work to keep that breadth as narrow as possible, consistent with the law and the Clean Air Act's charge to have a cooperative system of federalism in our country." Funny, I thought it was called the Clean Air Act, not the Cooperative Federalism Act. Bear in mind that in that 2007 case, Massachusetts versus EPA, the Supreme Court said that the EPA has jurisdiction to regulate carbon dioxide as long as the EPA makes a finding that carbon dioxide is a threat to public health. Well, it is. It absolutely is a threat to public health. We are not organisms which are particularly adept at breathing carbon dioxide. In fact, technically you can breathe it, but you can't breathe it for very long because you stop breathing because you suffocate, because our bodies can't take the oxygen away from the carbon in the CO2 molecule and do anything meaningful with it, like exist. It's not like this is novel science. There are, in coal mining. There will be buildups of gases in the mines. That's why mines, underground mines, have to be thoroughly ventilated at all times. Because you get into one of those gas pockets and you're dead before you hit the ground. There are two terms that have been historically used. I'll probably screw this up, but white damp, D-A-M-P, and black damp. And those are terms that miners came up with to describe gas conditions down in the mines. And white damp is the term they used to describe a CO2 pocket. Black damp was something else, maybe carbon monoxide. And there's that, and you get into it, and yeah, too late. This is why there really used to be canaries in coal mines, because the canary would die first, and then you knew all balloons gone up. Better do, got to get out of, boom, dead. It's not a secret. There's that one lake somewhere on the African continent that has a CO2 pocket underneath it, and every now and then a great big belching bubble of CO2 will kabloop, and everybody around the lake will die because it lays low. It doesn't rise, comparatively speaking, and it suffocates anybody that happens to be around. Patrick Morrissey does not think, and he's pretty clear about this, Patrick Morrissey doesn't think, remember, it's Titanic Tuesday, and this is some seriously Titanic right-wing intellect. Patrick Morrissey doesn't think that carbon dioxide poses a threat to human health. Not at all surprising from a guy whose morals allowed him to watch the state of West Virginia be flooded with opioids and think that those hillbillies will be just fine. They'll never get hooked. I don't know. I, I don't know, Glenn. Glenn said hydrogen sulfide black damp. I don't know. I wish I did. Note coming in, by the way, from Ron and Raleigh. After last night's program, I watched the big crossover on the CW of the DC Universe. If I didn't know better, I could have sworn they'd listen to you. The plot of the four-night crossover is that Earth 1 is invaded by Earth X, where the Nazis won. Every time there was a break in fighting, several heroes will state, "I hate Nazis." Did you by any chance give the writers this story outline? Just asking. Ron, you know, this kind of thing happens all the time. I think that there are people who listen to this program that kind of like the ideas that come out of it and don't want to share the largesse or anything, so they just take them and run because they know I'm just a nice guy. Ron says, P.S., the very capable Mick Mulvaney doesn't have just one agency to destroy. A federal judge found there's nothing in the law that keeps old Mick from being able to destroy two agencies. Yes, the Office of Management and Budget and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Don't you know the folks over there at Wells Fargo, we're probably pouring Dom Perignon like it was soda pop over that. Oh, we're gonna run another one of our $1 billion scams on people, and screw them over on their car loans and establish the credit cards for them they didn't know they had. And did, oh, this is gonna be big. Yeah, it's gonna be big. So, you can expect a call from Patrick Morrissey, dope peddler, demanding that the Environmental Protection Agency declare that they were completely wrong and there's nothing wrong with CO2 and it's not a threat to public health. Mm-hmm. Totally breathable. Morrissey said, at a minimum, I'd like to see the finding narrowed. The scientific questions are going to be addressed, but there are also legal questions relating to the legal breadth of the endangerment finding, whether it applies only to mobile sources or if it can apply to stationary sources. I don't think CO2 much cares, do you? Imagine that. I mean, this is the Orwellian world in which we now find ourselves. Nope. We know that CO2 kills. It is not a controversy to modern science or real science to know that CO2 has a negative effect on our atmosphere and on our planet and on our climate. But we have a government now that is going to make laws in direct contravention of all of that. They're going to try to reverse a scientifically based finding that carbon dioxide is a public health hazard. This is going to sound mean of me, but that's okay. I would like for Scott Pruitt and Patrick Morrissey and Evan Jenkins and all of the freaks to stand in a room together. We can replace all of the air in that room with carbon dioxide. and then we can let them make a scientific finding as to whether or not carbon dioxide is a public health risk. I had it backwards. Thank you. Thank you, Ron and Raleigh. Black damp is carbon dioxide. White damp is carbon monoxide. There we go. Yeah. John chiming in as well. Also known as choke damp. Hydrogen sulfide, by the way, Glenn, that's known as stink damp. The carbon dioxide itself doesn't have any particular smell. I mean, when you stick your nose over a freshly opened bottle of beer or soda pop, it just smells like beer and soda pop, doesn't it? And you can sniff the bottle and it doesn't hurt you. See, the Republicans are right. Oh, dear God in heaven. The hearing will continue tomorrow. I'm thinking about going down there. Would it be worth it to y'all? For me to go down and sit and just listen to the craziness tomorrow? Let me know. I'm not talking about missing the program. It would just make for an extremely long day, that's all. Flavio's been doing homework. Lake Nyos in northwestern Cameroon. Large cloud of carbon dioxide descended onto nearby villages. 21 August 1986 killed 1,746 people and 3,500 head of livestock. It was about 100,000 to 300,000 tons of CO2. They since have a degassing system at the lake. If only Patrick Morrissey and Scott Pruitt and the like could explain federalism to the people there at Lake Nyos, I'm sure they'd remove their degassing system, because carbon dioxide is absolutely not a threat to public health. It's not even really sarcasm what I'm saying here. Patrick Morrissey, and believe you me, he has influence inside the inside the administration of Tangerine Tiberius. Patrick Morrissey yearns, aches, hopes, dreams of making the American people breathe more carbon dioxide. Make no mistake, there's no hyperbole in this. With this kind of attitude and this kind of power, well, it's a scientific fact that carbon dioxide is a threat to human health. But at this point in time, Patrick Morrissey is a threat to human health. Evan Jenkins is a threat to human health. Scott Pruitt is a threat to human public health. Donald Trump is a threat to public health. It's just that they know which fork to use with the shrimp, and they have sufficient wealth and power to be able to do the that sort of banality of evil killing that right-wing Republicans are so very, very, very adept at. But they mean to kill you. And they mean to kill me. Maybe not specifically, but statistically, yeah. And that's all we are. We're statistics. We're not spouses and children and grandchildren weeping over open graves. We're just statistics. For a fact. And so that's our first Titanic nominee. But Lord God, Billy Bob, we got a bunch more. A whole bunch more. So, stick around. We've got a break to take here. And, of course, it being a Tuesday and everything, we've got the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I always look forward to those. If you want to get involved in the program, if there's something you want to talk about, let me know, 304-574-8178. Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. If you've never sent me a contact request, feel free to send me one. And by the way, I missed this earlier. I don't know how, but I did. Courtesy of our dear friend Ralphs, there is a $25 challenge on the table. Thank you, Ralphs. So that means the next $25 gets doubled. Your 5 becomes 10, your 25 up to 25 becomes 50. And that's a big deal, because so far we've gotten started this evening with Clarence and with just a minute, I gotta and Steve. And that means we're headed down toward the $400 mark. And if someone will meet Ralph's challenge, that means we will we'll go down to $365 to go. And we will have taken a sizable step toward finishing fundraising early for the month and having fundraising free Thursday, or if we finish it all off this evening, fundraising free Wednesday and Thursday. Wouldn't it be fun to have a prayer meeting Wednesday and not have to pass the plate? Just leave the deacons out there smoking with the sinners in the parking lot. Oh, I know. It's almost too much to dare hope for, but hope we shall. Hope springs eternal. Okay, so, I had a song in mind for the, but I don't now. Well, I'll tell you what, we've got somebody on hold, so we'll cut out the musical interlude. And just go straight to the Green News Report, if that's okay with everybody. Is that okay with everybody? I hope so. We'll be back in just a few minutes after we check in with Brad and Desi. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is the horn. And, yeah. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's Tuesday, November 28, 2017.
The danger zone around the Mount Agung volcano is expanding rapidly.
On the bright side, though, Bali's volcano eruption could temporarily lower global temperatures.
A recent report says hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, is likely responsible for a dramatic uptick in Texas earthquakes.
New study finds drilling wakes up sleeping earthquake faults. UN treaty curbing HFCs comes into force, plus...
This is really just the beginning.
Elon Musk makes good on his battery bet for South Australia.
All of that good-making and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We gotta give Trump credit when he deserves it. He pulled out of the Paris Agreement. And I think he should get credit for that because he said he was going to pull out, and then he did, and that's a refreshing quality in a man.
Yes, it's come to that. We're working blue. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, I guess we interrupt this Green News Report for... another volcano?
yes, we do. The ongoing eruption of the Mount Agung volcano on the island of Bali, Indonesia's top tourist destination, has forced the closure of its airport and the evacuation of more than 100,000 people, but it could also have a potential climate impact. Researchers at climate action group Carbon Brief say that if a large eruption spews particles into the upper atmosphere, it could have a cooling effect on the climate by slightly shading the sun's rays. But that would be only temporarily.
Yeah, I think you're digging really, really deep to find some good news in an otherwise terrible world.
Yeah, because 2017 is currently on track to be the second or third hottest year on record, according to both NOAA and NASA.
So bring on the volcanoes.
Well, yeah. Here in the U.S., yet another study links the fracking industry to the 600% increase in earthquakes in Texas. Southern Methodist University researchers analyzing deep geologic faults in Texas found that they were dormant with no earthquake activity for 300 million years. Until the fracking boom in the state. The researchers found, quote, no other explanation for the spike in Texas earthquakes except for human activity. The state has not officially accepted any link between earthquakes and the lucrative fracking industry.
Of course they haven't.
Some good news for the climate. A global United Nations treaty to reduce the use of hydrofluorocarbons, or HFCs, has now come into force with the signature of Sweden, meeting the threshold to trigger activation. HFCs, used primarily in refrigeration and air conditioning, are small but very potent greenhouse gases. The Kigali Amendment to the Montreal Protocol means that starting in 2019, developed countries must begin limiting their use of HFCs by 10%, with developing countries like China and India following suit starting in 2024.
Will Donald Trump be able to pull out of this one?
No, he will not. And luckily, it looks like the U.S. Senate will ratify this particular amendment because... the chemical industry is already behind it.
Well, there you go.
Some good news and bad news for U.S. greenhouse gas emissions. For the first time since the 1970s, emissions from transportation have overtaken emissions from electricity generation as the nation's top source of greenhouse gases.
Now, has transportation overtaken electricity, or has electricity undertaken transportation, so to speak, because we have cleaner electric generation now?
That's exactly it.
I got it right?
Yes, you have. The good news means that our electric grid is getting cleaner. That transition away from coal for electricity generation toward natural gas, wind, and solar is succeeding as intended in lowering emissions. But the bad news is that we are not doing very well at controlling carbon emissions from the nation's cars and trucks, which are rising again due in part to low gas prices. But innovation in electric vehicle battery technology is moving quickly and may put a dent in that. Battery tech company Fisker just filed patents on a new solid-state electric car battery that they say will have a 500-mile range and they claim will be able to go from zero to fully charged in just 1 minute.
Wait, seriously? It will charge in 1 minute?
That's what they say.
That's what they say? I'm dubious.
Finally, good news for South Australia. Tesla founder and CEO Elon Musk has made good on his bet to build the world's largest battery farm for South Australia within 100 days, or it would be free. It's now 45 days ahead of schedule. Tesla's battery installation is now up and running, connected to a French-owned wind farm. It is undergoing testing before going live to back up South Australia's electric grid. At the contract signing back in September, Musk called it proof that the future is in renewables.
This is really just the beginning, but I think what this serves as is a great example to the rest of the world of what can be done.
Well, it can be done, and he did it. And this was after South Australia was having all of these problems with blackouts. Will they continue to have them now?
That remains to be seen.
We'll keep watching for much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today. Check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide, please, on your Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
There is never a bad time for that song. There just isn't. Could we get Australia just to make that the national anthem? The entire world would be would probably be thrilled. Would you get a guy on that, please, Robert? Much obliged. Okay, 6 minutes past the hour, and it's been a little while since we heard from our buddy Jim. But he's with us now. Hey, Jim.
How you doing?
You know, just sitting here breathing coal smoke, loving life.
Well, I've been on work release whoring, so what can I tell you?
I think you've got the better of me there.
Now, listen, first, I've not been able to hear you since you departed from Washington, and I don't know why, but that's not the reason I called.
Okay.
We talked about
I've sent you a ton of emails. When White Rose doesn't work, you just go to headon.live.
Okay, I'll try it, but I've had other things that are, I'm afraid, been a little more engaging. But I wonder, and this is, you know, has nothing to do with what you've been saying, but I just posted on my Facebook about Donald Trump.
Yes?
And I'd like for you to hear it.
Okay.
That goddamn Trump with the Navajo code talkers, men who risked their lives, pictured underneath a portrait of Andrew Jackson, who dispossessed Native Americans along the Trail of Tears. That motherfucker, Adolf Hitler, offered racial action in the murder of the Jews in his Final Solution. Also, Trump's disrespectful Pocahontas remarks for Senator Elizabeth Warren are unforgivable. In the name of God, go, Trump. Depart, I say, and go for any good that you have been doing, and stand not upon the reason of your going. Just leave and take your minions with you.
I'd say that encapsulates it pretty well, Jim. And I'm glad you brought up the incident yesterday in the White House, because I didn't cover it last night, and it remained as disgusting this morning as it was when it happened. Donald, there's a lot of differences between Donald Trump and me. One of which is that I actually know the history of the Navajo code talkers, as do you.
I'm sure you do.
Donald Trump
yeah,
does,
I do too.
Donald Trump doesn't. If you asked him who the code talkers were or what they did, he couldn't begin to give you anything resembling an answer. Because he is an incurious moron.
But he said, you know, I like you. And pursuant to remarks about Pocahontas, he said, but I like you. You're good. That stupid motherfucking son of a bitch.
Now, Jim, hide not thy light under a bushel, okay? There's no need to call this program and hide how you really feel. That's a joke, Jim. It's a joke.
I'll take that under advisement, sir, counselor. I will, but nonetheless, that's just the way I bloody fucking
feel. Well, no,
it's
absolutely disgusting. And you know, adding to the disgust was the way that Sarah Hucklebuck Sandbags responded to it, saying, "Well, I don't think it was a slur. What I think is disgusting is the way Elizabeth Warren lied about her heritage. I don't know if she lied about her heritage or not. She comes from a place where she could very easily have indigenous ancestry.
Well, I have indigenous ancestry. We go straight back to Cherokee.
Well, you know,
Well, those blood samples off, or Native Americans, excuse me. I've always admired the Cherokee because, you know, they were under Sequoia. They had their own alphabet. They were incredibly developed people and good people. And Andrew Jackson threw them out of their homes and killed millions, thousands of them.
Yes. And of course, this entire event yesterday in the White House, in which he made his Pocahontas statement, took place beneath a portrait of a genocidal maniac, the very one, Andrew Jackson.
You got it.
And see, another thing that the moron doesn't know is that there are, to this day, indigenous people in this country who, if they have $20, they will carry $21 bills, or four fives, or two fives and a ten, or two tens. They will not allow the image of Andrew Jackson to be anywhere near them.
I know, for damn good reason. You know, I'll tell you, when I was in Amsterdam, I picked up a piece of bad currency that was just purely pornographic. And I just kept it in my wallet just in the end. You know, just put it in the back when I got back from overseas. And I tried to pass that thing inadvertently in front of a Rite Aid employee. And she said, "Mr. Anderson, do not believe this is legal tender." It showed this abominable sex act in the center of a dollar bill or whatever it was, and I said, "Excuse me, sorry,
beg pardon,"
and I curtsied.
Well, that's always a nice flourish. Jesus,
I mean, I never pulled court,
but in all seriousness, Sarah Hucklebuck Sandbags doesn't understand that neither she nor Trump gets to determine whether or not using the word Pocahontas is a racial slur. It is for the people being slurred to determine whether they are being slurred.
And for those people who are aware of the fact that they are in fact being slurred. But you know, Bob, how many of them really know about that? None. They don't give a shit.
I mean,
American Indian.
We've discussed this in the past, but you know, in the Capitol Rotunda, there are all of those famous portraits, paintings. The one of the signing of the Declaration of Independence is in there.
Mm-hmm.
The odious one with the cowering Indian at the hoof of DeSoto, as DeSoto, who was already dead by then, discovers the Mississippi River.
The father of waters.
Kind of hard to figure out how a white Spaniard discovers something that tens of thousands of people have been traveling up and down for the last 10,000 years, but we'll just take that as read.
Well, you know, that portrait, you know, when Hitler had his art exhibition in Munich in the 1930s, that would have hung very well up there.
In its own way, but I try not to use Hitler and hung in the same sentence. Across the rotunda from all of that business, there's another one of those giant-ass paintings, and it is probably as offensive, if not more, than the one of DeSoto.
I think I know where you're going with this.
And it is titled The Baptism of Pocahontas.
I knew you were going to say that. Yeah, you're right.
The forced religious conversion of an indigenous woman who, for all intents and purposes, was kidnapped away from her home, her people, and her land, and taken to England, where she died in misery.
Ain't we got so much artistic hagiography hanging up there?
Well, you know, we've recently been having a conversation about monuments that probably need to be removed. Those two would probably be a lot better off in museums. Yeah, you know, it's not that far. Just take it down to the National Gallery of Art down there on the mall and put it in a room.
There you go.
Because those are relics of a bygone and, you know, well, a racist, hopefully, bygone era. I mean, you look up at the ceiling, and you get the apotheosis of George Washington being carried heavenward on angels' wings. And, you know, that's okay. I'm okay with that. Because that's a reflection of the deism of the founders. It's about as close to I'm surprised that there hasn't been a movement, Jim, among the religious fundamentalists, the evangelicals, to, you know, put a drape over that or you know, cover it up or do something, because it is a declaration that upon his death, George Washington became a god.
He was canonized, Bob. Don't you know that?
Well, I mean,
not St. George of, you know.
But no. I mean, they were operating within the ancient Roman tradition the same way that that Julius Caesar became a god upon his cremation in the Forum. He became the divine Julius. They were operating on that kind of a philosophical basis. He became the divine Washington.
Well, I don't see where the divine Julius in his efforts, his elevation to the pantheon, did a lot of people like Mark Antony and Cleopatra any good, did he?
No, but he did a shit ton of good for young pusillanimous Octavian.
Octavian, yeah. Octavian was certainly a character, wasn't he? Not too well portrayed in that film, Cleopatra.
Well, I mean,
by Roddy McDowell.
He was sniveling. He was sickly.
Yeah, he was, absolutely.
Had it not been for his buddies, he wouldn't have survived but, you know, luckily for him, he was up against Mark Antony, who was no freaking genius either.
Mm-mm. No, not
and,
really.
And Octavian was learned enough and had learned friends enough that he could run a poison pen campaign against Mark Antony and turn Rome against Mark Antony when Mark Antony had the better claim.
That's true. But that's the way history spoke, and that's the way it happened.
I was simply going to say that the history, the ethnic abusive qualities of this country, you know, it's something sooner or later we have to deal with.
It is. And, you know, I don't know. I haven't been in D.C. for, 20 years, okay? I left there 20 years ago after retiring. And, well, before retiring, but nonetheless, after retiring, I'm sorry. But nonetheless, do we have a dedicated museum to the original people in this country?
We absolutely do.
Is there a building on the mall?
Yes.
That is dedicated to the American Indian?
There is.
Very good. I'm glad to hear it. Because that's one I happen to have missed. And I went to the mall, including the Holocaust Museum. And I haven't been able to go to the one.
We now have both the Museum of the American Indian and we have the Black History Museum. Or Museum of African American Culture.
I'm glad they do.
They are both exquisite buildings, by the way. The architecture.
And how can I miss that? I don't know.
Well, the latter only opened in the last couple of years, and the former only in the last four or five.
Right. Bob, when I was in D.C., I was CDY so many times. I spent most of my time out of the country. In different places, so I miss an awful lot. So, you know, that just happens when you live in, you're working at Joint Base Andrews and the Pentagon. You just do. You just don't have a lot of time.
Well, no, and I've never had enough time to do all the museums on the mall either.
I mean, the Smithsonian. How many are there underneath their ages? 7, 8.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, you could spend a week inside the National Gallery of Art and still be found wanting.
Exactly. And you know, I chose to go to the ones that I could spend a little time with and enjoy, and the rest, I guess, I had to put on the back burner. And I'm sorry that I did. And I wish I could come back, but right now I'm not able to. And right now, Rufus and I are under the covers, and he's asleep. And he's waiting on Santa Claus. And so we'll see what he'll get for, you know, whatever, later on this year that we call Christmas.
Oh, I'm sure he's eager, and I'm sure he'll get some sort of a lovely treat.
Yeah, he will. I have a good friend who just lost his cat of 18 years, and he's absolutely devastated. And so I've been, you know, consoling him, and you know, of course I've been through that. You've been through that. We all have. When we lose any loved one, whether it's on two legs or four legs, and there it is, and there you have it. But, you know, that thing with Trump today just crawled all over me. I mean, ever since that son of a bitch took office, it has been one nightmare after the other, to the point that I, who formerly was a devotee of the national news and things like that, I just can't take it anymore.
No, you have to, and it's kind of weird, you have to engage in what is referred to as self-care. If you are a member of the resistance, and you are, you can't just completely be subsumed by the outrage du jour.
You know, Bob, that's the reason. And I've sent you pictures of my grave marker. I've already had it made. And on that grave marker is the cross of Lorraine, which was the symbol of the French resistance against those goddamn Nazis. You remember?
Yes, I do.
And
that's the cross with the with the two bars and the sort of clover leaf at the end, sort of, or not clover leaf, but the like crenellations.
Right. It was taken from Saint Joan of Arc.
Yeah, and I first learned of it watching Casablanca, because a guy opens up his ring and that cross is there. Yeah.
And that cross is on my tombstone, and you know, and that was that to me is somebody, they'll never know who I was. I mean, on that thing there, who I was, where I went to school, and you know, there's a reference to our treatment of the animals, and there's a little kitty cat with angel's wings and stuff like that. I'm not trying to be sentimental, but you know, that's all I have to leave behind me. And I want, you know, maybe somebody will see it. Who
and knows? It's a last statement of as close to an eternal nature as we can get.
That's about it, because you know I've just been wondering about how in the world.
Me, I want a pyramid.
Well, I don't want a pyramid. Hell no. I mean, some of you are probably going to pound jar of Vaseline and sit on it.
Or at least a 400-foot obelisk.
No. I mean, come on now. What about a broken column? I mean, I've seen enough of those in Southern graveyards. I mean, those really abound in Southern graveyards if you really want to see them.
And they do. They get knocked over. And.
Mm-hmm. But this one's just kind of flat, and it's unobtrusive, and I hope not attract any types of bad folks and stuff like that. But, you know, going back to what we were talking about, I mean, this whole bloody fucking year has just been one
and
nightmare
it's not
after
even,
the other.
Yeah, and it,
how,
I mean, we...
But, Bob, listen, how can we allow him to stay there and do what he's doing? He is making a laughing stock of this country, and he is dangerous. This man is a psychotic.
Yeah, I'm gonna reach into my historic hip pocket, if you don't mind, Jim, and I'm gonna bring something to the fore here, and it's one or the other. I don't know which one, but after the demise of either Caligula or Nero, the Senate.
Or Claudius.
Well, no. After the demise of either Caligula or Nero, I'm not talking about a successor. You know, all the talk from Caesar forward, Julius, had been, well, we've got to restore the Republic. Remember, that's the first thing that Brutus and Cassius and the conspirators did was they murdered Julius Caesar, and then they immediately put on caps of liberty because freedom had been restored to Rome when there were more Romans experiencing freedom because Julius Caesar was seeing to it that they just had enough to eat every day. And they put on their caps of liberty and expected to be greeted as liberators. And suddenly they found out that people weren't so crazy about this notion. But anyway, from that time forward, it had all been about, you know, the Republic must be restored. So it was either after the death of Caligula or Nero, the leading powers went to the Senate and said, okay, he's dead. No more emperors. Let's give power back to the Senate. And the Senate said, mm-hmm. Are you kidding me? There's people that kill people out there. Give us a new emperor. And what I'm afraid of out of this is that for all that we talk about, Trump is going to destroy the country. Jim, the destruction may well have already been accomplished.
He is the absolute metastasis of said destruction. He really is. Absolutely. Well, listen, speaking of our government, how were things in D.C. your last trip? I haven't talked to you in weeks, so I don't know.
It's been a while. D.C. trundles. It's still kind of the way it was when I was there in July and when I was there in January. There's a lot of people trying their dead level best to exist normally. They're trying to pretend that it's just another day in D.C., just like if anybody else was president, you know, just got a job to do, you know, the little interns go back and forth in the halls, and D.C. is run on the backs of 22-year-old recent college graduates, and there's people, but they're drinking differently. Does this make any sense?
Probably more heavily.
Well, differently too. I mean, if you just stand in the watering holes and you listen, you hear a different sort and a different tone of conversation. Where before the young folks that run the government would get sloshed at the end of a day and sit there and earnestly talk policy at each other, while at the same time hoping to like get laid. Now,
this happened to me, Bob. Because
now it's more of a sort of whispery kind of what the fuck, you know, kind of conversation that you know, not as boisterous, not as rowdy,
more sort of okay.
Yeah, like somebody might be listening.
I'll tell you what, I called Madigan's office this afternoon, and I spoke with this young intern. And she was extremely bright. And we covered the whole spectrum about Trump and this, that, and the other. And I said, I'm calling to beg your boss. And I gave him every address line that I had to please not to vote for this tax program. It is destructive. It is inimical to everybody. And she said, you're right, it is. And she said, you know, Jim, this is just absolute fantasy up here since Trump has been in power. And we had at least a 30-minute conversation about Trump and about some of the other things that were going on in the Senate. It's a tax bill. I mean, the tax bill that nobody's even read.
Oh, I mean, nonpartisan. Congressional. Who's this? The does the scoring? They've read it, and the numbers are grim. Starting in 2019, the not rich people, the not even okay people, the not even the well off people, the not okay people, the struggling people are going to take it in the shorts.
I know that.
And by 2027, 10 years hence, it is going to be hell among the yearlings. The deficit is going to explode to the tune of $1 trillion.
And it's going to take at least a 60-vote majority in the Senate to even undo this thing.
Yeah, they're trying to do the damage, and they're trying to make it the problem they create.
Undoable.
Yeah, they're undoable.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they're trying to leave that as their legacy.
And it's their modus operandi in all things. It's like what I was talking about in the first hour, Jim. The fact that they want to not only roll back the idea that carbon dioxide is a public health hazard, they want to make it so that the EPA can never, ever, ever, ever again ponder anything relating to greenhouse gases. And once again, this has a historical precedent, and it goes back to the years before 1860, when the southern majorities in the House made a rule. It was a gag rule that forbade any member of the House of Representatives, where free speech is absolutely privileged, made a rule that no one could ever, 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 ever raise the issue of the abolition of slavery. And in fact, if you take the tour of the Capitol, you can see the desk that John Quincy Adams, after he was president and went back to the House of Representatives, that he sat at when he crafted his abolition bill and was censured and gagged for violating that rule. Well, that is exactly what this administration is trying to do with regard to climate change. And, you know, I thought of something just a minute ago, Jim, and I'm not trying to put any sads into this conversation or anything. You were talking about the columns that get toppled in southern graveyards, and I've seen broken obelisks. I mean, we both know, you know. And so by having a flat stone, your hope is that no one will see fit to do anything to it and, you know, maybe leave your bones at peace, right?
Right.
And if you're comfortable talking about it, I'm comfortable talking about
sure.
it, even though I'm not comfortable talking about it.
My bones won't be there.
But
they will not be there.
Well, I understand. But here's the thing. I don't care how many such laws and regulations this administration passes. They cannot legislate against the laws of nature. They cannot put a gag rule on a rising sea levels.
Forgive that cell phone.
That's okay.
Because as somebody who calls me, and my cell phone is, I don't know who the hell it is. It's just bear with it for a second, will you?
That's okay.
Go ahead.
We can keep talking. This is all I'm getting at. You come from what is referred to lovingly as the Low Country.
I do.
And your heart is a low country heart. And the fact of the matter is, you are at greater, your final resting place is at greater risk from sea level rise and climate change than it is from ruffians and roustabouts.
Well, let me tell you something. I'm buried up in the upcountry in Camden, which is 120 miles away from that seashore.
Yeah.
So at least maybe I'll have a couple of whatever that.
You'll have a few decades above the wet.
There you go. Beachfront property. Maybe they can use it to put an umbrella stand on. I don't know. But That conversation I had with that young intern today, and she was totally in agreement with me. And, you know, it really sounded like she was trying to advise Senator Manchin maybe not to vote for this tax thing. And I don't know what his stance on it is. Do you?
Well, he's riding the fence. He's trying to be cute and be paid attention to.
Well, you can't do that in something like this. I mean, he's going to have to take one stance or the other. And if he does,
well, I had
he's
the, I had the
really...
story. I had the story here. Just 1 second, and I'll. Yeah, there it is. According to The Hill, two Democratic senators won't rule out voting for GOP tax bill. One of them is Joe Manchin.
Well, I certainly hope that he will not. And she sounded like that, you know, they were pushing him, and he was leaning toward not voting for it.
Well, if he wants to be, if he wants to be reelected, I suspect he had best vote against it.
I would think so too.
I mean, you and I, we both live in the Trumpiest place on earth.
We sure do. Oh, by the way, excuse me, have you seen the advertisement for the Trumpy Bear?
Praise God, I have not.
It is like a teddy bear, and it has French cuffs. I guess there's some type of link to hold them together. I like French cuffs because I think they're very elegant, but nonetheless.
Does it have tiny paws?
It's got big paws, and it's got blonde hair, and if you can comb it. Michael, and ride so that it will not be unpleasant to view. And you can open up the back of the Trumpy Bear, and you can find an American flag. And you can wrap yourself in the flag as some type of warmth giver. And you know, goddamn well, you're not supposed to use the American flag to do something like that with.
Yeah, but I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican.
Well, it ain't okay for nobody to do that. I mean, Bob, I serve this country. I know what it is. And goddamn it, I don't like for anybody to wrap themselves in a goddamn flag to keep warm.
Or dress that dress their teddy bear in it.
Exactly. And they're selling this shit two payments of $19.95.
Where in what? I mean, I'm going to ask, on what channel are you seeing
this? On the American History Channel. Or American Military Channel.
Oh, dear God. I don't think I...
And it shows one woman reclining, getting warm, and another big old butch thing with a bandana. And, of course, he's supposed to be a Vietnam vet. That's what he says he is. On a motorcycle. And he's got the bear in front of him, and he's taking very careful care of it.
You know, you're the guy who originally brought us Titanic Tuesday.
True. And I won't forget we had a good time that night, did we not?
Oh, yes, we did. We've had many good nights. And this is another one.
I remember when I first called you and told you about it, I think you were about to fall out of your chair.
It's a beautiful moment. It's absolutely a beautiful moment, and I try to recreate it every Tuesday, with my with my monotone,
and that old fool sitting there reading newspapers and stuff like that, and probably trying to fart without nobody hearing it, you know him.
And you know, and here we are. This is just the way the Horn family works. I now have in front of me the Trumpy Bear official commercial.
You want to read it to us, Bob?
Well, it's video and everything. Let's see if the audio's any fun. Let me see here. It'll only take a second. this can't be real. This has to be like
PUR, it is real.
This has got to be a skit.
But through the forest, a storm is coming. You cannot defeat the storm. From the trees rose a resounding voice. I fear nothing. I come when the trumpet sounds. I am the storm, the great American grizzly.
Is this
introducing
it?
The original Trumpy Bear. The fearless, super plush American grizzly. Trumpy Bear was born June 14th, Flag Day. Just find the secret zipper and pull out the flag blanket. Then wrap yourself in the red, white, and blue for comfort and warmth. Show your patriotism and proudly display Trumpy on Flag Day and on any American holiday. Trumpy can even honor your own family heroes.
God bless America and God bless Trumpy Bear.
Trumpy Bear sits proudly at the front of the motorcycle for all the world to see and loves to cruise with his brother.
I'm a former Marine, and I'm proud to have Trumpy Bear ride by my side. Once a Marine, always a Marine.
Everyone knows Trumpy Bear loves to go to the golf course.
When I ride with Trumpy Bear, he makes my golf game great again. Thank you, Trumpy Bear.
Simply style his trademark hair and place him in his favorite chair. Even the toughest guys will love Trumpy Bear.
When America is great, business is great. When business is great, I'm great. I love you, Trumpy Bear.
I am an Army veteran. I am proud to own the Trumpy Bear, and I will always be proud to be an American.
Order you have got to be Trumpy kidding
Bear
me.
Only two payments of $19.95 and receive a special certificate of authenticity.
I mean, don't miss out on your ass with
piece of American history. Order now for only two payments of $19.95. Trumpy, the most fearless bear anywhere. Order now.
My sobriety is officially challenged. I mean, I'm not going to meetings or anything, but you know, for my own continued good health, I don't drink anymore.
I'm drinking right now.
If I stop the program right now, you know, the liquor store closes at 10. I still know that, Jim. I keep them on speed dial.
Call over here, I'll give you a drink.
God Almighty. I won't make it past the liquor store at the top of the hill. I won't.
Listen, I've got a huge highball of crushed ice with Johnny Walker Red in it, and it tastes damn good.
Oh, no. No, no. For this, no. Only the worst goddamn rot gut on earth will do. Holy.
I thought that might give you a charge and give us a bit of humor, but it's just.
Jesus, where's the cooking sherry?
I'd
settle for another bottle of that jalapeno peach wine that Carol Baker sent me once. Son of a gun!
I'm not kidding. It's all over. It's at least four times a week. And I watch TV a lot because I've been laid up, as you know. But, you know, at least from my 180-degree position.
I'm never going to complain about that woman that texts her therapist in the middle of Times fucking Square again. And I'm okay with Molly now, too.
Good.
Who designs robots that take people's jobs.
Well, there you go.
And you know what? Gordo and whatever he does on the couch is okay by me.
Me too. You know what? When I saw that, I picked up the phone and called a friend of mine in San Francisco, and I said, I know you're not listening to this particular thing because we're on different stations, and we're on different wavelengths than where you live, though I wish I were where you are now. And she said, well, what is it? And I said, Trumpy Bear. And she said, okay. Davey said, I'm going to look for this. And about a week later, she called me back, and she said, you have got to be fucking kidding me.
Well, at least she didn't call you a dirty son of a bitch or anything, but
No. She is
No, you have done real damage, Jim. I just want you to know. You've done real damage. I just got a message from Brother Deacon Asa. God damn it, Bob. This is it. I have to bow out. I didn't think I'd live to hear that swill. You did it, Brother Deacon Asa. Out.
Is he blaming me?
Well, me, I mean, it's, you know, I'm running the program here. I made the command-level decision to run that swillious audio, but, you know.
You need to fucking hear it. You need to see what is being done there.
And somebody's making a fortune off of it, and it's made by little and the damn thing's made by little Chinese children who are chained to a table in Guangdong Free Trade Province for two cents a day.
And probably with these big things are catching from jumping out the window.
Really, a polar fleece flag blankie.
Yeah.
That you can, like, you know, get little dribbles of chip dip on and you know, sneezy snot and stuff like that when you're cold in the winter.
Or if you're incontinent, you know, you could just...
Well, you had to go there, didn't you, Jim?
Well, I'm just going the whole spectrum of it. That's it. That's what it's used for.
Yeah, and the next thing, yeah, all you got to do is pee on it a few times, and it turns into a teabagger flag. Don't pee on me.
Well, there you go, baby, and just throw it in the washer. Everything's all right because, you know, you couldn't help it because it was a Trumpy Bear, and he wouldn't mind if you did that because he understands because he has to pee himself.
And Trumpy Bear has urine-colored hair anyway.
Of course.
And now we got the wise asses in the chat room going, play it again, Bob. Play it again. Play it again.
Good. I'm glad.
Trey in Kentucky I love the blankie gimmick. Jesus.
Well, anyway, and you know how Trump's hair was somewhat helped when he went to Russia, but we won't go into that. I mean, even I'm sorry.
Damn you, James Anderson. You have started something again. I got a message now from Thomas. If anyone sends me a Trumpy Bear for the holidays, I'll light that little bastard on fire. So let's say you get a Trumpy Bear for Christmas. If you burn the blankie, is it flag burning or blankie burning?
Blankie burning. And, you know, my sister, who is an avid Trump supporter, would be the one to send me one. And if she did, I think I would probably go to a dear friend of mine whose name I'll not mention and put some C4 in there and send it back, saying, if you want to hear Trumpy Bear really...
Jim, wait. Sometimes we don't know when the muses are paying attention to us.
Oh, I know.
You may have started a social phenomenon. We need people, you know, it's hard to sort of stomach the idea of giving up the $40. But, okay, so here's the idea. Okay, just work with me here, okay?
I'm working with you.
Everybody who has a Trumpansie relative, tell them you want a Trumpy Bear for Christmas. All right?
Okay.
Now, one word.
Got it.
One word. Tannerite. You know what Tannerite is?
I think I do.
We've talked about it in the past. It's this stuff, and it's perfect. You can buy it at, like, hunting supply stores, outdoors, you know, sporting goods stores. You can order it.
It'll burn like shit.
No, it doesn't burn. It's completely inert until you shoot it. Okay?
That's what I mean.
And then it blows up like all hell. So we need it.
Exactly.
This might be a thing for the holiday season. Everybody get your relatives. If your Trumpansie relative says, what would you like for Christmas? Say, I want a Trumpy Bear. And then they'll get you a Trumpy Bear, and you take out the flag, and that leaves a big empty space in the back of the Trumpy Bear. You fill it with Tannerite. You get far, far away. You borrow your next-door neighbor Trumpansie's 30-06. You set up the video. You roll the video. You shoot the Trumpy Bear, and you watch
and
it. You watch it explode into a million teeny tiny pieces.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a pretty involved process, but, you know, it can be done.
Well, you know, the ice water bucket challenge was pretty involved, too. But look how that took off.
Well, that's true, too. But, I mean, that is the extent to which these people are going to lionize this idiot, this just non-person into some type of... I don't know what you want to call him. I could use words. Some type of deification of Trump. I mean, with damn it doll hair. The hair is what I notice, and it is lovely.
Okay. Since we've moved into the realm of,
you can comb it, you can style it, you can take a hair iron and curl it.
You know, there's absolutely no justice in the universe if Trumpy Bear doesn't wind up in some sort of smutty little porn film.
Probably not. Absolutely.
You know what? If you got the money, you can hire some Russian hookers to pee on it.
Well, hell, I think they've already done to the real one, from what I hear. You know where I hear where he stayed in Moscow? That room that he was in probably had enough detectors and this, that, and the other listening devices that you could fry, you could microwave a chicken in it. And they probably did send some women in there maybe to see him. I don't know. I was not there. But, you know, I had been to Moscow, but I had never had to stay in a place like that because I was too poor to stay anywhere else. I had to stay. Never mind, I can tell you where I stayed. But nonetheless, I'm sure they had every means of surveillance on that son of a bitch.
Well, never mind where you stayed, as long as it wasn't the Hotel Lubyanka.
Yeah, that's true.
I hear there's a hell of a view there.
Yeah, all the way I can see eternity or Siberia. But nonetheless, you know, I'm sure there's something on him that Putin has. And, you know, I really believe that in the eventual end, if this investigation should come out, God knows, I hope it does, that it will be result in his own denouement.
Well, I just had correspondence from Matt in San Francisco, who said, and you know, you love language as much as I do. Subject line: over the edge. We need to bear them, not join them. BERM, BEAR. We need to bear them, not join them. Wait a minute. That's just terrible, god awful punnery. And he who would make a pun would pick a pocket. Is that what the old saying was?
That's it, basically, yes. Yeah. Well, I wanted to contribute something, though I haven't spoken.
Oh,
to you
no, no, you've made you own this show now, Jim. I mean, you absolutely. I mean, whew.
Do I get a jingle?
Yes, you get a jingle. Yeah, you get your very own cowbell there. Absolutely.
Thank you very much. I do appreciate your largesse.
A cowbell. you get a cowbell with Trumpy Bear clusters.
Oh, my God. I don't know if I can handle this. I may have to faint. I may have to.
Quick, to the fainting couch.
My fainting couch, my camera cases, and my Barbara Cartland novel.
I suggest a medicinal application of the aforesaid Johnny Walker Red, but who am I?
That's it.
I am a doctor, so, you know, take the doctor's advice.
You know, my doctor's name is Johnny Walker.
That's because the goddess of irony is a good goddess and is looking
he
after
is.
You.
He is. And he came to see me. I was pretty sick the last week, and he came to see me. He will come to see me at my home. And I have a whole bar set up in my man cave, and there's a huge thing.
Do come
Walker.
In.
And I said, look, I said, Johnny, I said, knock yourself out. He said, oh, hell, Jim, I get busted going home. But anyway, I do.
Slunjava.
There you go. But, you know, we are in such, and I listen to so many of the wonderful people on Progressive Voices, and I'm going to try to give them a plug. I'll give you a plug, too. I always had tried to give you a plug, basically, until you and I have gotten into it. But, you know, I think basically we come out all right.
We're all right. We're all right, Jim.
But, you know, and when I listen to from, you know, starting with Stephanie Miller, going through the others, and Randy Rhodes. Now, Randy Rhodes is a woman after my own heart. She's Air Force, and she does not fuck around. And I love it when they say, call you bastards. I'm talking to Howard, and he says, oh, Jim, I don't know if she's going to have to handle your call or not. It's just too nasty. And he just starts laughing. And, you know, sometimes she does. And I think the
Randy is sui generis.
She's wonderful. She absolutely is. And, you know, I forgot the definition of that word. Can you help me with that, sui generis?
She is a thing unto herself.
Thank you.
Ain't no others.
Mm-mm. And that lady's been places and seen things and been things and seen places. And the conversation she and I got into was about what an asshole Trump was. And I think asshole was probably used about 50 times during the conversation.
And that was the mild part of the conversation, yes.
Yes, sir, it was. But, you know, there are a lot of good people out there who are trying to broadcast and do a lot of things. I wish I could help some more, but unfortunately, my own situation doesn't really allow a lot because of medical problems, things of that nature. But, you know, to my last dying day, I will fight to do everything I can with my last breath to put every post, every phone call, every tweet, everything, every word I see on the phone to defeat these sons of bitches who have destroyed our country.
Hear, hear. And that's all, you know, no one dare, you have already given to your country and no one dare ask more.
You goddamn right. You goddamn right. And to tell you the truth, Bob, I never thought I would say this, but right now I am ashamed of my country. I am ashamed of it. I'm ashamed of the people who are directing it.
I'm ashamed of the people that made this happen.
The oligarchs, and they own this country. When you and I first started talking, I said, Bob, I said, there are two streets that run this damn country, Wall Street and K Street, and it ain't Main Street. And it's really risen to the absolute pinnacle of oligarchs trying to take over America. Citizens United.
Trying?
The Koch brothers, and all these other people.
And you know what? With a little perspective on that, we tend to think, because all of this is so intense and so immediate and so overwhelming, we look and we go, we pretend that this shitstorm, that the first few droplets only started coming down on November 8th, 2016. By God, no. No,
it goes back to
the year 2000. It goes back to something called Bush v. Gore. Okay.
Oh God, I will never forget that day. I will never forget. My mother was alive then, and we were on the phone during the election. And she said, "Jim, Gore has taken Florida." I said, "You got to be kidding me, Mom." No. And I think I had to go to the bathroom. I said, let me call you right back and get a drink. And then I come back. She said, they've reversed it.
Well, so you know who David Frum is, right?
I'm not sure if I remember, Bob. I'm sorry.
David Frum worked for George W. Bush. He was a loyal Bushy, but now he's a part of the resistance because, you know, Trump is a disaster for America and everything.
Well,
And he's written a book, David Frum has, called Trumpocracy, soon to be published. Trumpocracy.
Really?
In that book is the following quote. If conservatives become convinced that they cannot win democratically, they will not abandon conservatism, they will reject democracy. Now, this is David Frum, who was close and near and dear with George W. Bush. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay, I remember the name now.
What, speechwriter or something? Let me just check here real quick.
He was part of his cabal.
Yeah, I feel almost certain, but I want to make sure that I don't misspeak. He was a speechwriter for President George W. Bush.
Mm-hmm.
He's 57 years old. He was born in Toronto. As a speechwriter, he may be the guy who created the Axis of Evil.
Yeah, the Axis of Evil. Yeah, sure. I remember that. Absolutely.
Okay.
Sure do.
Well, I saw that tweet, and I recognized his name, and I thought, oh, no. As George H.W. Bush used to say, this will not stand. The point that I previously made, that this didn't all start on January the 20th, 2017, with the inauguration of Donald Trump, is a goddamn fact. It starts, there are many little points, data points that as Sparky points out, he's on MSNBC all the time. Oh, I know, there's all kinds of rehabilitated loyal Bushies and Republicans, absolutely. But that moment in Bush v. Gore, when the Supreme Court, thanks Sandra Day O'Connor, really, thanks, first woman justice of the Supreme Court, and she fucked her country. How about that? Thanks, Sandra Day O'Connor.
Reagan appointee.
Oh, you know what? They need to put her, when she goes, they need to put her name on her tombstone, date born, date died, and then the only thing else that goes on there is Bush v. Gore.
I really do.
That is, we live in a secular country, and so there aren't any such things as saints or sins, but in a secular republic, what she did is as close to an unpardonable sin as we have. That decision, Bush v. Gore, comes as close to treason as any judicial opinion ever has.
Stop the recount.
Exactly.
Stop it.
Because it was a petition for an extraordinary writ, and Petitioner Bush will be irreparably harmed if every vote is counted. I will never forget that, Jim. Petitioner Bush will be irreparably harmed if every vote is counted.
What does that tell you? That tells you that he would have lost.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And she actually put that in writing. I cannot believe that Supreme Court decision. What in the world was in her mind?
She signed on to it because it was pure politics. The law had nothing to do with it. It was more of that Duralex you've talked about in the past. So I saw that quote.
Duralex, Duralex.
If conservatives become convinced that they cannot win democratically, they will not abandon conservatism, they will reject democracy. And this is supposed to be some high-minded statement of political principle, blah, blah, blah. And all I could say is that the verb tenses in that statement were all wrong. And so I changed it. When conservatives became convinced that they could not win democratically, they did not abandon conservatism, they rejected democracy. I put it all in the past tense because it all is in the past tense, Jim. It all is in the past tense, and it goes specifically to Bush v. Gore. Because that is when we gave up on the idea of anything resembling democracy in choosing a president.
And it goes all the way back through history, too.
You can't have Donald Trump without George W. Bush.
No, you can't. No, you can't. No, absolutely. I mean, he laid the groundwork. And now we've got this idiot up there who governs by tweeting and makes all these outrageous statements who makes us the laughingstock of the world. We are no longer the leaders of the free world. We are simply people that we are part of a circus. We are the circus freaks. They used to be a decent government. Used to be.
But it's over. I mean, that's what I'm getting at. It's over, Jim. It's not what he's going to do. It's what's been done.
I know. It's all, you know, really. And anything he does from now on, people have become so inured to it. Oh, well.
And
yeah.
Look, let's be clear. Some of the same people who pulled the rat fuckery in regard
Nixon.
To Trump were doing the rat fuckery back then. Roger Stone, okay? This David Frum, who's clutching his pearls and wringing his precious hands about how the conservatives are rejecting democracy, he can stick it up his ass, okay? Because, well, he was perfectly happy when Roger Stone was orchestrating a goddamn coup in Miami-Dade County where they were counting the votes. He was thrilled to fucking pieces when that happened, David Frum was, because it meant he was going to have a goddamn job writing speeches for George W. Bush as president.
There you go, Bubba.
Oh,
there
but now, precious David Frum is all upset, and he's having a sad. Fuck him.
True. Fuck him. Well, you know, he was, in my opinion, you know, a Judas. And once you've hanged yourself, you can't come undone. I don't give a shit what this asshole writes. If anybody knows what he did back then, and read this book now, I think they will realize exactly what an absolute slap in the face it is to even pick up the cover of it.
You know, forgiveness and absolution is for priests, Jim. I ain't in that business. And I'm not going to be suckered in by a bunch of hand-wringing and pearl-clutching.
Mm-mm.
Because you know what? Given the opportunity, he'd slither right back in amongst all of them and take their coin. It's not that he doesn't want them. They don't want him.
Well, trouble is, you've got 100 more just like him, who would slither in as quickly as he could, and if they would find use for him, and they would, you know, they can always find use for another person like that. And they would. That's the whole thing. Bob, I just never thought that things would get as bad as they were or are. I mean, we used to
Was there a time in your life, Jim, where you looked up and went, "Can't get any worse than this. It's as bad as it's going to get. It's all sunshine and daisies from here on out."
About 19 at least, baby. About 19.
So that'd be, what, about 1966?
That'd be about 19 numbers. I don't know. As long as I've been alive, I haven't been alive that long. And, you know, the last time I really felt so proud of my country and my country's leader was John Fitzgerald Kennedy. I was only a boy.
Yeah, put paid to that too, didn't they?
They sure did. I was just a boy then. I was a cadet in the Citadel, freshman, plebe, walking in the gutter. Couldn't walk on the street. You had to walk in the gutter. And I can remember an upperclassman coming by, and I noticed that the garrison flag had been blown. It was half-mast. I said, "What's happened?" He said, "They killed the President Kennedy." And I saw that, and I don't know, it's just something died in me. It did. I was only 18 years old. I wasn't even 18, Bob. And then the year later, I was over, and I was a camp counselor at the Citadel, at the Mark Clark Citadel camp, summer camp for boys, and I taught archery. Hell, I even taught Mark Clark how to teach a bow and arrow. Can you believe that?
You're kidding.
I sure did. Yeah, he said he never shot one. He wanted me to show him how to do it. And I said, "Sure thing." I talked to him about how to string the bow, how to set the point of aim for the target so he'd give you a guaranteed hit, and, you know, gave him an archery lesson. But during the, this was the following year that President Kennedy had died and Johnson was in control, the Gulf of Tonkin had been passed. And the junior counselor and I were just on the grass having lunch. And all of a sudden, all of these huge flights of planes began coming out of Charleston Air Force Base. I mean, there must have been 50 an hour. And I said, where in the fuck are they going? And one of the TAC officers there was jogging. And I said, Captain so-and-so, I said, what is all this in the sky? He said, don't you know? They're going to Vietnam, Bubba. I said, you going to Vietnam too? He said, they take their route out to from Charleston Air Force Base to Elmendorf, Alaska. And from Elmendorf, Alaska, they got to go to either to Tachikawa in Tokyo, or they may go to someplace else in North Vietnam, but they go end up in Tan Sanut. And he said, that's when Johnson, you know, allowed all those people to be deployed into Vietnam. It's 1965. I wasn't even 20 years old. And I can still see those C-41 Starlifters, or the planes they were using at that time, en route, one on the tail of the other. And I said, oh, shit. And my class, 2 years later, we lost more than any other class in my graduating college. One afternoon in 1970, it was a year after Tet, I received 10 death notices in the mail. 10. Black funeral cards. I got no more classmates, Bob. All killed.
Jesus.
Boys I'd known, grown up with, put up with hardships with, lockstep with, pledged our allegiances to, and our devotions to.
And their lives were thrown away.
Basically, you have it. And they try to cover it up, you know, with stained glass windows and stuff like that. But it has still done something to me that I cannot get over this day.
I don't think anybody, well, no one would expect you to.
And for what? My God, when they got over there, those people, shit, we were fighting people that they weren't even fighting. They wondered why we were there. I mean, they had a bad regime, it's true. And if President Kennedy had lived, I do believe he would withdraw all that stuff. And I'm not trying to go back to all that, but you talk about going back into history, this, that, and the other, and where this country has gone. I mean, it really has, it started a long time ago. And I admire Lyndon Johnson. I really do. For his great society efforts and things of that nature, his theater programs and all that stuff, he was trying to lift people up. But he was trying to do one thing with the left, and he had the Pentagon with vicious generals on the right who wanted to have a war so they could have promotions, they could have contracts, they could have all types of money and influence after they retired, and so they could leave their retirement and go into these big things like Dow, Colt, and other chemical countries or companies.
Well, and that's what I was going to say, Jim. The reason may not be apparent, but damned if it wasn't good for business.
Oh, yeah, it was good for business. Yeah, it was always a rich man's war and a poor man's fight. And God knows what that war did to this country. And, you know, it started a lot of stuff.
Well, just remember, your brothers in arms went, but the current president of the United States had him some bone spurs.
Yeah, he did, didn't he? Son of a bitch. That son of a bitch. He would even know. Let me stop here. But nonetheless, yeah, we got somebody over there. And whenever I see him deplane, I see people suing him, and it makes me want to vomit.
I understand, Jim. I do. Well, Jim,
I don't mean to unload with you tonight. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I want you to know that you've created a real mystery here. You've got as fierce a debate going in the Horn community as any I've lately seen of people saying, listen, talking about Trumpy Bear. It's got to be satire. It's got to be a joke. And now I'm gonna hold you to your honor, Jim. You really have seen this advertised on a real live, no kidding, not a comedy channel. You've seen this advertised on a TV channel.
I will put my hand on my best copy of Anna Carrera.
That's pretty serious swearing for you, Jim.
Right, I've got my prayer book right here. You want me to put my hand on it? I've had it since I was a boy.
That'll do. I mean, because it's like something that Asa said to me a minute ago. I'm almost willing to bet that the creator of Trumpy Bear is a lefty trying to take advantage of the stupidity of Trumpanzees.
Probably. Of course they are. I mean, they have these people who sit there, and their job is to generate these types of merchandise that they think will sell. And among his base supporters, I bet you every goddamn motherfucking son of a bitching goddamn motherfucking one of them has one. And they're going to be giving them out for Christmas. I'm sorry about my language. I apologize.
That's okay. You don't do it a lot. And in this case, I more than understand. But
we had talked for a long time.
I mean, I've got it here. I clicked the order now button, and it takes you to a place where you pick out what you want, one payment or two payments.
Uh-huh.
One payment of only $39.90.
$19.95, Bob, it's a day. You know how it
Well,
is.
That's two payments, but you can just do it in one if you want it right now for Christmas.
And you would say, I praise Jesus, because I just love to have it, my trophy there underneath my Christmas tree, and my little kids can just comb that hair and make how lovely
it is. I mean, there are a few little details here. For instance, if you live in Texas, you will be charged 8.5% sales tax.
Oh, why am I surprised?
But then there's a real live place for you to enter all of your credit card information and your address and shipping mm-hmm. information.
Sure do.
And on the next page, after you place your order, you can order more than one Trumpy Bear.
And it's just magic, because over those ones and zeros, it will just fly right out of your bank account. And you will have acknowledged by somebody who probably monitors what you're doing with your bank account how it will do in support of Trumpy Bear.
Meanwhile,
I don't know why I'm talking like this. I'm trying to sound like one of these evangelists.
Meanwhile, Laurel has said, "Oh look, Trumpy Bear has two little homunculi for feet. Nightmare feet. Yay! Nightmare fuel."
I wonder if Trumpy Bear's got a Peter.
I ain't looking. You want to take one for the team, Jim?
No, I'll take it. I mean, he's got to have a big one. I mean, isn't that what?
Okay, but there's one more shallow thing to go into. Have you seen these photos of how Melanoma decorated the White House for Christmas?
Oh, I can't handle that.
No, I'm not kidding.
Is it all gold?
No. It's goddamn creepy. I mean, it's Mistress of the Dark creepy. It's this white, this stark white hallway with these barren branches that are lit from below that just create this monochromatic hallway. And there's a picture of her, and she's dressed in all this feathery white stuff. I mean, it's weird. I mean, this is the kind of stuff you'd have to pay for. It's like Christmas in
fucking Transylvania. I kid you not. You can look
That's
it up.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. This is Christmas, not Halloween. I mean, who's expecting Count Dracula?
I mean, it's sort of, I mean, it's like a, oh, I don't know. It's like an East German Stasi version of Christmas or something. No greenery, no O-Tannenbaum, none of that. Just a barren, white, nothingscape with barren branches. Barren. Oh, look, it's for the kid. And her standing there looking like melanoma mistress of the night.
Oh, God. Well,
I mean, it looks like something out of The Lion, the Witch, and the goddamn wardrobe.
Oh, God. Speaking of Stasi, I remember having a run-in with them because I was taking currency out of the country. We will go into that. I remember being in a cell. You don't move. You don't move. You got currency.
Whoa.
You got rubles. Oh, Lord.
And that's another thing about the order form for the Trumpy Bear. There's nowhere on there for you to pay in rubles.
They should be. Lord in heaven, there certainly should be. But, I mean, you know, that thing is just incredible when I saw it.
Well, there have been nights. I remember the night when David in Maine first told me about that god-awful Kid Rock song that ripped off Werewolves of London and Sweet Home Alabama at the same time, and I was just sort of left with my mouth hanging open catching flies. There have been a few nights like that. There was the night that Peter Godbold, rest his soul, told us about the Pat Robertson Sea of Galilee mud mask, and that crippled
True,
me.
True, I remember.
And well, this one goes in the Hall of Fame. It does. I mean, this is better than Squatty Potty. F me running, you know, just.
Oh, Lord. But, you know, I have heard Bob, that Brother Bob, listen to me.
I'm just glad there's no goddamn scope in the bathroom or anything, because I drink mouthwash at this point.
I have heard that Brother Bob, you listen to me, that stuff from the Sea of Galilee will do everything. It will freak your hemorrhoids up to the size of a mole.
It'll shrink your hemorrhoids up to your tonsils.
That's what it will do, Brother Bob. And you know how it is. God bless you, Bob. Boom. What is wrong with me? I have never talked like this.
It's either too little Johnny Walker or too much, Jim. And only you can tell.
No, I'm okay. I'm fine. I'm just fine. I mean, it's one thing I can handle.
Well, I'm glad somebody is, because I'm not okay.
Or who can be okay?
I really do. I want to make a video. I want to get me a Trumpy Bear. I want to fill him up with Tannerite, and drive the wing nuts crazy. I mean, because it's easy. They lost their. You know, I talked a little bit about. You know how I feel about the Royals, so we won't go down that road. I mentioned that engagement yesterday.
Who gives a fuck?
But no. So you know, Prince Hank, Prince Hal, whatever he is. Is marrying a woman of mixed race, and it drove the wing nuts crazy. They're now calling him Bastard Cuck Harry.
Oh.
And he's going to muddy up the royal bloodline.
Enough of those in their family? I mean, have in the history of that royal family, all the way back from the Tudors to the Plantagenets, have they not had enough people who were of the wrong side of the blanket?
Well, I mean, it's kind of, if you consider the grand scope of things, it's sort of a feature and not a flaw, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a feature. It is a feature. But I will say this, in defense of the royal family, and you know where I'm going to come from, and that is the late Princess Diana. I loved her. She was taken advantage by those people, and they used her as a brood mare. And they took advantage of a 19-year-old girl who nothing else but teaching in.
Well, from the looks of things, she
kindergarten.
From the looks of things, she got her revenge with Harry. Because there is no way that Charles is that boy's daddy.
Oh no, absolutely not! Thank God he didn't have that Windsor horse face. But nonetheless, that won't. Laugh, fool, laugh. I love it.
That Windsor horse face.
That's exactly what it is. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, you know, Diana.
No, I'm sorry. No, it just reminds me of that. It just reminds me of that delightful, filthy joke about the night that Diana and the Queen were playing 20 questions, and the Queen always won.
And, oh, of course.
And so Diana writes down her answer, and the Queen starts out, and she says, "May one eat it?" Diana looks down. "Well, I suppose so." And the Queen says, "Is it a horse's cock?" And Diana says, "Damn it, Mum!" You know, just...
I do. I think I recall Diana first, right when she joined the firm, so to speak, at dinner. And I think Elizabeth very sterily looked at her and said, "Well, what are you thinking about?" And I think about what happened when Diana was killed and how long it took to drag those motherfuckers back from Balmoral, because they knew damn well they had a revolution on their fucking hands, because they knew what had happened. And she got her ass back, and I'll tell you, she basically pulled one out to save the monarchy, because that could have taken it down. Because, you know, Diana, even, and you know, speaking of genealogy, she had greater right to be there than they did.
Well, hers went back further.
Much further, much further. And
those Spencers weren't exactly what we would call around hereabouts jumped up.
No, sir. And she was so beautiful and just lovely and compassionate. And, you know, she took over these things that she wanted to do to make her own reality, you know, her own reality to the world. And she was hugging age patients. And she was going into places where they didn't think she should go. And she was compassionate. She was humane. And she was beautiful, and I will never forget after she and Charles separated when she came out in that beautiful gown with those pearls around her neck, and she said, "Fuck you." And that's exactly what happened. And I will still believe to this day that MI6 may have had something to do with that. I don't know. I'm just emoting here. But of all the royals, from Henry VIII, that lecherous bastard, on all of all the royals, she will always have my love and devotion. And every year on the anniversary of her death, I always put a wreath on my door for her. I always do. Because I truly loved her. I mean, landmines, AIDS, children that were undernourished, malnourished. She didn't have to do that. She was there. And in spite of her lineage and royal blood, this, that, and the other, and she had more royal blood in her corpuscle than the royal family existed now had in their entire body.
And you know what? The tragic... The tragic woman associated with the British royal house is an archetype. It goes all the way back to, oh God, what was her name? The mistress of Henry II, Rosamond. If you watch, and it's a hot, you know, most people don't think of it this way, but it is. It's a Christmas movie, The Lion in Winter, because it all takes place. It's a Christmas movie.
Played by... Catherine Hepburn, who's
right.
Eleanor of Aquitaine.
Right. There are frequent references to Rosamond in that film.
Oh, yeah, that was Henry's girlfriend.
Yeah, yeah. Women tragically being done away with by the British royal house. It's kind of a thing. But just real quick, just one quick observation. All the little right-wingers that are having a fit about the fact that the fiancé, the financier of Prince Hank being of not pure white ancestry. You know,
who gives a fuck?
But hold on. I find it hilarious because all that pure white ancestry is wound up with people like, who was the freak on the Spanish throne? And then, of course, the whole reason that the Plantagenets came to naught after Henry V because Henry VI inherited the madness of his grandfather, the King of France. You know, that keeping the bloodline nice and white sure has worked out well for them, hasn't it?
Sure has, had it done it. It sure has. That genealogy back in those days, I mean, those family trees were just cut down, butchered, and re-pruned.
Those family trees looked like balls of yarn.
They sure did, darling.
Jim, you have yourself a good evening, my friend.
I want to say one more thing,
yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
As far as women are concerned, I have always been a supporter of, an apologist for, and will the day I die, for women being able to have the same equality as men and to not break that glass ceiling, but to bust that fucking thing wide open.
Hear, hear. Hear, hear. Well said. Well said indeed. Jim, give my regards to Brother Walker there, would you?
He is right here. As a matter of fact, I just put a new thing of crushed ice into a decanter or a carafe, and we're just going to go on, and we're going to probably watch something. I've got this little BD player in the bed with me. I'm going to watch that stuff on TV. But nonetheless, you know, I've enjoyed our conversation. And I'm so sorry I can't get you on TV. I mean, on TV, but on the internet.
White Rose is working tonight, but who knows when it will again. The other one is fine. Just headon.live. Okay? It's that simple. LIVE.LIVE. And once you go there, you'll see the horn logo and a big picture of the New River Gorge Bridge. You scroll down a little bit, and boom, there's a player. And you press play, and it goes.
I found that once, but I can never find it again.
Headon.live. I've sent you the link. It's in your email, unless you deleted it.
I know you have, and I feel stupid for not being able to respond to it. But my God, finding that picture, I was like trying to look for the lost cord. Well, I'll try it again. I sure will, Brother Bob.
All right, you take care,
and
Jim.
Listen, my regards to Carol Baker. How's she doing?
She's okay. She's okay. She's taking up digs in Kansas City, a little closer to work, so she doesn't have the brutal commute. And we hear from her every now and then. We haven't had a conversation out on the ledge in a while, but it might damn well be getting time, you know, kind of close to it, because the holidays are upon us, and the madness. There is no surcease to the madness.
And how's your brother in Georgia? The one that we've talked about before.
I'm not sure who you're talking about. You talking about Steve from Georgistan?
I believe I am.
Oh,
yes,
Steve,
sir.
From Georgistan's just fine. He sent me a little message a little bit ago saying, send our regards to Jim. He's a fine fella.
Well, you tell him I said the same, and to wish him a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, or whatever he likes to say, and a Happy New Year, and a long time here.
Well, you just did. You absolutely just did. So have yourself a good evening, Jim, and I'm sure we'll be talking again before the holidays are even fully underway.
Well, just take my calls, and, you know, I'll try to work out the technical things. And in the meanwhile, a couple of this, I will slide into Mike Malloy.
Sounds good. You take care, Jim.
All right. You too, sir.
Bye now.
And my regards to your family. All right. Are you doing okay?
They're doing all right.
Good thing.
All right. Take care.
Out here.
Bye now. That's our buddy Jim, who can certainly bring some things to the table. And really, I'm almost halfway to being with Asa on this. This may be a giant right-wing punking, but Trumpy Bear appears to be real. Holy smoke! And wow, And there's Clarity jumping into the mix. Hey, Clarity.
Hey.
How are you?
Well, I think I'm getting better. I started on an antidepressant a couple weeks ago and went off my Neurontin because it was seemed to be having a negative effect on my mental attitude.
That stuff can do that.
And let me turn down the other feed.
Okay.
I can listen to myself.
I hear a bell.
That's my rice. I got home from the doctor.
Oh, I thought angels were getting wings.
Oh, maybe. I had another runaround with the insurance company. I had an appointment canceled with my electrolysist. I had to have, you know, the pre-surgical hair removal. And I started in on this right after I had my orchiectomy, you know, because that's the next procedure that has to be complete before I can have the correction surgery.
Right, the confirmation.
So my primary care wrote a letter, you know, support letter. My urologist wrote a letter. It was presented to the insurance company, and they kept delaying. I mean, it was presented in April, and it wasn't approved until February of this year. So
Jesus.
It went almost a year. And what I found out yesterday, the inside behind the scenes, you know, I had this gut feeling that I was being, you know, singled out. Well, apparently I'm the only trans patient in my co-op and the only one that's receiving it through the Obamacare Medicare. You know, it had trans care
coverage, right?
Yeah. So it's supposed to be covered by my Medicare thing because my diagnosis, not trans, but that's, you know, the care is mandated in Obamacare. And they found out, or my trans coordinator found out that the people that lived in the Portland area, in the Valley, were getting the services paid for by Medicare, but my co-op was somehow not getting the Medicare funds approved. And
maybe they didn't want to?
Well, you know, you don't know because it's they're going through Moda Insurance. The carrier is Moda, but they're merging all the, you know, Eastern Oregon and basically in Greg Walden's district. But the Oregon Health Plan, you know, it's also covered there. So, you know, I should be getting care, but I've had delays and interruption in care, and they finally canceled an appointment a couple weeks ago, and, you know, so I called the insurance company, said, oh, you have an authorization, and I said, well, I got a bill, which I wasn't supposed to get a bill, but I got a bill because they haven't been getting paid, and she goes, well, what's the provider, and I gave her the name, she goes, well, it's not, she said, the insurance
not on the list.
Said that it wasn't on the referral, so that they couldn't bill off the referral. Well, I talked to the trans coordinator, and she said that's BS. That, you know, that was their – they actually created that electrolysis position at OHSU, so they had a dependable, you know, person that Medicare would accept, you know.
So, it's somewhat interesting perhaps. I read a lengthy piece in the Washington Post a couple of weeks back, Clarity, about a physician who was at the Washington State University Hospital Medical Center, and he realized that corrective surgery was not being offered anywhere in that region.
No, not in Eastern Washington, no.
And so he began doing all the necessary studying as a surgeon to learn how to do it. And he became competent and took it to the hospital board and said, I want to do these surgeries because they are necessary and they're needed and nobody, and then there's no access. And the board was initially like, well, okay, seems reasonable. And then there was another surgeon. He wasn't somebody. No, he was just this other surgeon who had felt a deep and religious abiding need to speak out about the immorality of doing that kind of surgery. And lo and behold, what was a simple approval process turned into a nightmare that ripped the community apart.
Yeah, well, that's kind of how it feels sometimes with me, even though I wasn't there, you know, when they're on the phone, emails, faxes between each other, you know, between the billing department, between the urology department, between the transgender care department, you know, and this is the OHSU is the best hospital system in Oregon. And it's the only one that's not controlled by the Catholics.
And we know how they feel about that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, and interesting that I mentioned Greg Walden, because the guy that drove me was a year younger than me, and he grew up in Pendleton, which is our, you know, rival. We're 30 miles apart. And for years and years, like for almost 50 solid years, they beat us every year at football. It wasn't until the 80s that we finally beat them. And then this is our last season as an Oregon school. We're going to play against Washington schools next year because the district's a lot smaller, the league. Because, you know, in Eastern Oregon, it's 3 hours each way, you know, 4 hours, 5 hours to Ontario, 4.5 hours to Bend, 3.5 hours to Portland. And that's the teams, you know, we're playing. So they opted to go into Washington League, and the longest drive is Walla Walla, which is 45 minutes.
Oh, that so makes sense. It'll
save a lot of travel time.
So do you finally, Clarity, do you have a reasonable timetable?
Well, right now they've got two surgeries scheduled, and they have to get their electrolysis finished, so her calendar's pretty full. Right now, I'm only getting two visits in January and February, and that's not enough. And today, too much information, but my electrolysis shared with me that I'm the hairiest person she's working on right now. So, you know, it's just a lot more brush to clear.
Yep.
And then you have to wait for regrowth.
You know, that was that was very pleasantly euphemistically put. I have to give you kudos for that, Clarity.
Okay. Anyway, she's saying it's going to take a year, and right now, the only person who's performing them in Oregon is booked out through, I think, April of 19. So he's training someone, a second surgeon, and it takes them 2 years to get board certified in the procedure.
I can see where it would.
Yeah, well, and Dr. Doogie was a plastic surgeon before he started doing the vagioplasties, and he was inspired to do it because he had to correct some really botched surgeons. You know, when you first started telling your story, I was thinking, oh, this other surgeon decided he could do this. And, you know, he scarred up a bunch of people because that can be worse than anything.
No, he just ripped the community to shreds because he said Jesus told him it was wrong.
Well, believe me, I have those inner demons inside of me, Bob. I was raised, you know, a Church of Christ, the one that doesn't have instruments.
Oh, the one without a kazoo?
Yeah.
Oh, you're in serious recovery, Clarity. I mean, you're probably...
Yeah.
You probably started out deeper down the rabbit hole than even I did as a Southern Baptist.
Oh yeah, very much so. My mom's brother was a minister.
Oh.
So yeah, you know how much I've went against the grain. And luckily, all my relations live in Florida and Georgia and Alabama, so I don't see much of them. In fact, only my first cousin is really in contact with me out of the whole family. What else was I going to say? Oh, anyway, this driver grew up in Pendleton, and, you know, we you know, kind of had some of the same spirit, except he was a car jock. I really wasn't into cars. But, we could talk about some of the people that I competed against in wrestling. And, you know, of course, it hurt when he said, yeah, didn't we stomp your ass for, you know, like 3 decades? It's like, yeah, he sure did.
I remember every stomping, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, back to the high school here just won the state championship, 5A. And it was their last season in Oregon, and they beat Pendleton. So it was a win-win for us.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah. And it was, the team that we played for the championship was undefeated, and it went down to, like, the last minute of the game. We won 38-35.
Wow.
Yeah. And they had a really big line, and one, you know, hard running their linebacker, or their running back, I think he ran for about 140 yards. And their total offense was better than ours. But our quarterback really had a balanced attack. He had 3 running backs that were, you know, 60, 70 yards each. He had 5 receivers, 3 touchdown passes, you know, and I think they're going to be contenders in Washington State next year.
Wow, that's cool. So,
yeah, we finally got a coach out of one of the Valley Leagues that likes living here. Every time we get a good coach, he'd move on. But they got a brand new, they built a $3 million stadium with artificial turf. And within 3 years, they had a state championship.
That's amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot of people around say that. So, a lot,
I mean, having gotten off the Neurontin and everything, are you holding up okay?
Well, the first couple, you know, weeks with the antidepressant, I was really having, you know, bad side effects, headache and constipation and just, you know, not feeling in my body. But I don't know, I'm feeling like I don't, like, self-check myself so much when I say I need to do something. I just kind of get on with it rather than, you know, with the depression, you're always like, oh, do I really want to do this? It's, you know, and I'm light sensitive too. So this is normally my more depressive time of year. And so my...
Sometimes it's hard to tell just between the time of the year and it versus, you know, some sort of personal pathology.
Well, that and you know, I guess I listen to you and Mike a little more than I should. You know, you guys are such a ray of sunshine.
Oh, I know.
I love the truth. Anyway, make a longer story longer. The driver finally confessed that, you know, he knew Greg Walden and worked for him, and pointed out the radio stations that we'd listen to while we were going through the gorge. He owns a station in Hood River. And anyway, before he came out to me, I mentioned that I'm involved in the Blue Mountain Marchers. It's a Democrat. We're trying to find somebody to run against Walden. And he says, well, we can't have all Democrats. We got to have somebody, you know, we can't be like Washington State and blah, blah, blah. And then he kind of went off on a thing about Obamacare, you know, because he had to pay too much for premiums. You know, he's working for minimum wage, and I can't figure out, you know, why he'd have to pay so much for premiums, you know, on the Oregon health plan. But, you know, obviously he drank the Kool-Aid because he said, yeah, I couldn't think of anything.
Right, and what's this, we can't be like Washington? I know for a fact that Washington is not completely democratic in its representation in D.C.
No, there's, yeah. But he's talking about that we have 4 out of 5 are Democrats, and they're fairly progressive Democrats, too. And then we got, you know, Wyden and Merkley. So, you know, it is, Oregon is definitely a blue state, But they, you know, how the Republicans, we got the most land. You know, look at all this red here.
Yeah.
You know, and it's his district's so big because everything's so damn spread out.
Well, and so damn unpopulated.
Well, there's no infrastructure here besides the interstate freeway to develop anything.
Well, nobody wanted it at one point in time. It was that was the open range, by God, and it was there for, you know, it wasn't there for people. It was there for cattle.
Yeah, and you know the southeast part of this,
and,
Mount Hood County, very much there. I mean, where we're at here in Morrow County, we grow a lot of food, a lot of onions.
A lot of onions.
Wheat. And then there's orchards and vineyards over, between here and the mountains. Milton Freewater's a big orchardist area. And Walla Walla just, in fact, the whole Columbia Basin.
Right, just up the road to Walla Walla.
Yeah, in an hour from here, there's huge hop yards. They're,
Now,
famous.
I would like to see that sometime, beer aficionado that I am. I'd like to see a great big hop growing operation.
Oh yeah, when they're in bloom, you drive through there, and
it's an amazing plant because at the height of the growing season, properly nourished, you can almost watch the vines grow with your naked eye in real time.
Oh yeah,
because they'll grow up to 3 inches a day. It's one of those things where if you set up time lapse, you could see it, you can see the hop vine, spreading out, but it's got to be something to behold.
Yeah.
And those flowers
You said you'd never been out to Oregon, right?
That's true.
Well, I tell you, there's a lot of cool things out here. Crater Lake's an amazing place.
I'm looking at, it sounds crazy, but I always have a sort of a backup plan because now that West Virginia has been sold to the Chinese, it's just a memorandum of understanding. I'm not kidding. It's some stupid amount of money that the Chinese have said, we'll just buy what you got. And if that damn thing ever goes through, we are so far past screwed here that the light from screwed won't reach us for a million years.
Well, I don't know what should be given away. I mean, we gave away Navajo land to the Peabodys, mineral rights. I don't know. I kind of saw that coming, that we were going to start selling off our national treasures, to pay for all these damn wars and let these people just free range on raping the land because they believe the end of days is here, and the earth is here for us to be prosperous and use up what God has left us, that bounty under
well,
the
what,
ground.
What we got going on here is a 20-year, $83.7 billion Chinese investment in West Virginia's natural gas industry.
Oh, gas, okay.
And that means
talking about coal gas.
That means they are going to frack. They're going to frack every square inch of this state, and then of course they'll have to have 42-inch high-pressure pipelines to carry it to the seaports to load onto the giant LNG barges to get it to China.
Yep.
And give the Chinese long enough, and they'll just build a pipeline straight from the Western Hemisphere to China. I mean, they're thinking that kind of big.
Well, so far we've been able to keep our water. They've been trying to steal water from Cascade Locks there, Nestle, and they're still trying to get their drill in there.
But what I mean in saying that is that I look at states, Clarity, thinking, hey, if we got a bug out, where do we bug to? And my nature is to. Well, I was born in the South, but my God, I was born in the foothills of Appalachia. I've been Appalachian all my life, and
yeah, it's hot You got to be under the air conditioner all summer long.
But I would have to be out of my ever-loving mind to move down there if things just get unbearable here.
Yeah.
And so I've got a short list. You know, Massachusetts is one of them, but Oregon and Washington, California sorta. But the problem that attends all of them is how do you even begin to do that?
Cost of living, yeah.
Well, if I didn't have this shabby, rundown, 80-year-old house that doesn't have a payment on it, I couldn't do this program.
Oh yeah, well I.
Because I'm still working on health care, and if I wind up coming back and saying, listen, you know, we're going to have to raise $5,000 a month instead of four, you know, if we're going to have to raise, you know, whatever, then I'll have a revolt on my hands and the program will go away. Because, you know, there's been a $25 challenge on the table since the program started that hasn't, you know, and it's like untouched. And we're just trying to finish the month of November. I mean, it's worrisome. I'm not sitting. Yes. This is not a fundraising pitch part. It is worrisome to live in a sacrifice zone, Clarity.
Oh yeah, I did. Yeah, I know exactly where you're at, and I know it's probably not good for your health either to be living there. You know.
And it'll get worse if this deal goes through.
Yeah.
Because there's a shit ton of air pollution that comes with fracking. It's not just the ruination of the water, and if there's a flaw in the general resistance to all of this, is that we tend to focus on one thing going bad to the detriment of everything else. Everybody looks at mountaintop removal, and we know there's been 2,000 miles of stream buried, and what about the water? Well, what you can't see can kill you, and it's the air impact that are doing, and this isn't Bob saying this, this is the scientists saying this, it is the air impacts, the air pollution, that is doing the vast majority of the health harm in this region.
Yep.
And they're actually, and as I started the program with it, they're actually having hearings braying about the fact that they're going to make the air pollution worse. They're proud of it, Clarity.
Well, you would think if you were, you know, somebody in outer space looking down going, you know, I think they're trying to reduce their population.
And it's not just that. I was talking to Agnes the other day. There is an actual memo from like the late 70s, 80s, whatever, written by the chief counsel for what was then Columbia Natural Gas, that laid out a plan of depopulating West Virginia to make it safe for the gas and oil, gas and coal industries.
Well, I had this vision that some agricultural areas would be off limits for civilians because of the pesticides and things that they are using, you know, to try to give us perfectly clean vegetables and things like that. But you shouldn't be around when they spray them. You know,
no, because, you know, if the women are around, they'll wind up giving birth to babies with gills in the head tops of their skulls. Right.
Or stillborn.
Well, there's that, too. Yes.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we're out of time, but it's awful good to have heard from you, Clarity.
Yeah. And I did have some good news that, you know, they finally straightened out the billing, and I'm kind of the Rosa Parks of TransCare in Oregon. Now I wedged through the Medicare gap that.
And you know what? You doing that is going to make it easier for the next human being that goes down that path.
Well, and I have to think that way because, geez, I feel sometimes like, God, why am I putting myself through this shit, you know? But it's a lesson in patience.
Well, you're doing it to be the human being you know you are. That's it.
I appreciate that, Bob, and hope to talk to you sooner than later again.
All right, take care, and I hope everything continues to go well, Clarity.
Yes, and Toto, too.
All right, bye now.
Bye.
Calling from the wilds of eastern Oregon, that's our pal Clarity. And it's time to get out of here because it's about a minute before the hour. Thanks to everybody. Hey, thanks to Steve and thanks to Clarence for jumping in this evening. Like I said, there's still a $25 challenge on the table.
that'll take us down to, if that gets met, that would take us down to 365 to go to finish off the month of November and have a fundraising free day. If that could have 365 before 6 o'clock tomorrow, and it's awesome. So thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful evening. Thanks for spending your precious finite time engaging in this little conversation that's been going on for more than a dozen years. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. It's Giving Tuesday, by the way. Coal River Mountain Watch is a real, live, no-kidding 501c3 organization, and they need your help, a grassroots organization that needs your help more than most of the, you know, great, big, well-funded, $100,000-a-year salary-type organizations. Maybe think about helping out. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.